on it, and they're on it. Plaques where each one has maybe 20 names or 25 names. And we would like, I would like, maybe we could give all our,
artifacts.
A lot of artifacts and funds to some congregation, maybe a small congregation. And I'm suggesting that maybe give it to the, not to the Hillel here, but to, there's a Jewish organization, the Kehila, who wants to start a temple in Chapel Hill. Most people who belong to a organized temple go to either, you know, go to Durham. There's
right.
two synagogue temples in Durham. And there's a quite a large Jewish population in Chapel Hill now.
I think so.
And they have this Kehila organization, which they hope, which is just a togetherness. Kehila means togetherness. So it's an organization just to bring the Jewish people together. They have services, they have seminars, they have covered their suppers, they have a little Sunday school, a little Hebrew school for the children, and a lot of them that do not belong to the temples in Durham, and some of them do. And my thinking, and I've expressed it back in Weldon, that maybe we could work out some arrangements with this group in Chapel Hill that they would become, they would benefit from the things there, and that they would take, like especially the memorial tablets, and place them in their synagogue. And
is that what they're called, just memorial tablets?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a Hebrew word for it, but I guess the Hebrew word would be a yahrzeit.
Plaques.
Yahrzeit.
Y-O-
is a memorial.
R-T-S-A-T.
Y-A-R.
Yeah, Y-A-R.
You can spell it any way you think it's Z-E-I-T. Yahrzeit. But that would be something that I think a lot of us would like to see that there. That not thrown on a junk pile.
Right. When did the synagogue have the stained glass windows?
When we built the temple back in about 1953, we were already married, 53, 54 by that time. We were married in 52. And I was the one who thought of the idea of using this little brick bungalow maybe as basis for a synagogue. And that was soon after we were married.
It's a beautiful little temple. And it's sort of fashioned after a synagogue at Virginia Beach.
Same architect did it. So
I think they might have the same stained glass windows.
They weren't made in
New Jersey. New Jersey.
Yeah.
They came, I remember when they put them in. So anyway, you know, that's sort of the story of our synagogue. I don't know how much longer it'll be there. Our good friend Ellis Farber used to say that there would be a Jewish community here 10 or 15 years from now, and forever, he said, and he never would consider thinking about what's to happen in the future.
Right.
But he kept saying that this synagogue will be here, there will be a Jewish community here, it's been here this long, it'll be here much longer and all that, but you got to look at the handwriting on the wall. I mean, you can see what's happening. Mm-hmm. The Jewish people aren't coming into these small towns. They're coming into Raleigh, coming into Durham, Chapel Hill, Greensboro, Charlotte.
Right.
But they're not. And if they work in one of these small towns, they live in the largest city nearby.
Right.
So it's happening all over. Wilson just sold this synagogue building and, you know, did away with it. A few Jewish people who live there either go to Greenville or Rocky Mount. Now, Tarbor Jewish synagogue closed up years ago.
They used to have a large Jewish
community. A large Jewish population in Tarbor, I would imagine, back in the 1920s.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe even before then, yeah. And so, you know, that's just the way it's happening. Goldsboro, I think they closed up their synagogue because they gave some of the Torahs to Chapel Hill, I believe, to this Cahillan route. I think that Torah
came from,
I think came from Goldsboro.
I didn't think they had a Torah. They've been using the Hillel.
Well, I know, but the one at the Hillel house, I think, I'm not sure.
Somebody from New York just
gave another one.
A Torah to the Cahill.
Yeah, well, that's the second one. So like I said, you got to look at the handwriting on the wall and be realistic about it. I hate to see it fold up and
it's sad.
Be
it's sold. Really sad.
But you know,
but
it's just
that's
like,
the way it is.
Just like churches are, you know, it's very dear to the people who grew up there, belong there. And that's why you see so many old churches are still, you know, kept up. And
I know some of the churches in Weldon have diminished.
The population in Weldon has diminished greatly.
The young people don't stay.
If they come into the area, they go into Roanoke Rapids, mostly because of, mainly because of the school situation.
Yeah, our church in Harlow is a rural church, rural Methodist church. On homecoming, we might go half the church.
Yeah.
That's at homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just the way things are now.
You're very pragmatic about it now, at least. You sound very...
Well, I talked about it, you know, I guess I was one of the first ones to talk about it in the last few years.
Actually, Ben was the one who brought it up.
My son Ben was, you know, he could see the handwriting on the wall, too.
No, that, I was the one that said I could see the handwriting on the wall.
I'll take you for credit. But, So anyway, what else have we got to talk? I have some plaques upstairs I wanted to show you.
I'd love to see
them. That sort of tells the story of what we've been involved in Weldon. And
yeah, I'd love to.
The reaction we got from the community, I guess that's what it was.
Okay, before we do that, is there anything else from either of you that we just ought to not miss in this kind of interview? About your lives.
Well, you know, there was one thing we talked about, and there was one thing I never understood. When I moved to Weldon, and everyone was happy for me to be there, and I was asked to join the Junior Women's Club and the Garden Club, but there was a book club and a Thursday afternoon club that everybody, quote, who was anybody belonged to.
Thursday afternoon clubs, like a little, they have tea and things.
Well, it was a literary club.
Literary group. I was never invited to join those clubs, and I don't know of a Jewish woman,
right,
who had ever been invited to join those clubs, and I never have understood why.
That's kind of a funny thing. Like, on one hand,
we're involved in everything else
exactly
in the community. And
how do these lines get drawn?
I don't know. They had in their bylaws, from what I understand, that, you know, a person could be blackballed. And if a person is blackballed by one person, they're not invited.
Well, I don't know anything about blackballs.
Well, I did, because Kate Allen told me so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And if somebody voted against you, then she told me that you and Evelyn and Sophie and maybe Ida too, all Louise Farber,
who was raised
in Weldon and was
and very much
friends involved with all these other people,
and she was
never invited to join, and she talked.
She
about
was it. Even on the library board.
Right.
And you would think Sarah was on the community college board and became chairman, and you would think that she was the type of person they would want to.
Right.
You know, but just in the last year, they took in one Jewish lady. One
who's 80 years old.
80-some years old. I think they ran out of people in Weldon to have as members, so they finally became. And maybe some of the older ones passed away, and maybe they were the ones who wanted to keep it.
Well, I don't know. All these years, Harry, this has been 46 years.
And we were friends with all the people who belonged to
me. Right, I mean, it sounds like you were in everything.
But it was sort of like, almost like my being blackballed in Rotary. You know, this one person blackballed me, and at that time.
I don't know if it was blackball or whether our names were ever brought up.
They were brought up. Kate Allen told me that all your names were brought up. I talked with this Kate Allen. She's 87 years old.
Oh, she's terrific.
And I didn't mind talking to her about it. And I told her, I said, the only thing about living in Welland that I can't understand is why none of the women were ever taken into to the Thursday afternoon or the book club, and they were all intelligent people, and they would be
literary minded.
They would have been an asset to the club, I mean, instead of some of the people that took you. But anyway, we moved away from Welland.
On that same note, for years, no Jewish people were taken into the country club.
Welland had a country club?
Welland, Ronald Crabtree, it was. Ronald Crabtree's what it was right between the two towns. Originally, when they first organized it, Mike Joseph, they were taking in members, and then he didn't play golf, and I guess eventually he got out. But then there were a lot of Yankees who came down from up north with the textile mills.
Right.
And they sort of, in fact, the textile mills was the one who started the country club. And they, had control, and they too had a blackball
system
in it. And finally, and this goes back about, I would say the late 1950s maybe, a group of the members, younger members, got together and said, if you don't take in Bob Liberman and Fanny Marks, whom they wanted to play golf with, and Fanny was this, she dressed all these people, and we're going to all resign. And they forced whoever, the club, to stop this blackballing just because you were Jewish. And then soon thereafter, we were invited to join, and the Freeds were invited to join. And they were only too glad to get us in and pay dues.
Not
bad. Even taking blacks now.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me to ask, did the Jewish community as a whole have a different relationship with blacks and with the civil rights happenings, or was it, in that sense, was everybody just white and black, or was that different?
Well, I think it definitely was a white and black division.
But there was no middle ground.
Being in business, most all of us were in business.
Right.
And we knew the blacks, and they knew us, and we got along real well together, but I guess, they felt closer to us than they did to the other white people that they hardly knew, because they didn't have any contact with them.
Right.
But, I felt very close to some of the black people. I got to know them, they got to know me. I served on the school board with some of them, on boards with some of them. And we didn't have that antagonistic feeling toward them. Told them that I think so many of the whites had. When the schools integrated, a lot of the whites moved to Ronald Crabtree. Another group of whites started a private school, so they didn't want their children going to school.
And y'all were part of that?
No.
What about I know it's hard seeing it from this.
Some of them did. Some of them took the children out. Some of the Jewish people took their children out and sent them to private school. One of them got an apartment in Ronald Crabtree. Not because they didn't want them to go with the blacks, but because they realized that the school system was much better over there. And that the children would miss out on the social activities of the school. And
Do you think that if it's hard to see it from someone else, when you're not in someone else's shoes, but if a black customer who had come into your store in the 1940s or 50s or any time, 60s, would have be treated the same way as maybe this isn't a fair question, but if there had been a typical Christian department store next door, do you think that from their point of view, the African American was going to be treated the same way
in both stores, or were they more likely?
I think they would have been treated all right in the stores.
Yeah.
Next door to us, because there was a Lebanese family had a clothing store, and they were Catholic, and because we got along very well with them, they were very good friends. And I think, you know, they certainly didn't have any trouble with them in the store. I don't know how they felt about them outside of the store, but I think the Jewish people
probably...
Well,
they're in a different situation, too. The Lebanese, in some ways, as not being quite so tied to all those old things from the past. But I wonder if it's like just a normal...
I think they were, the customers
Joe
were...
Joe Satterwhite or whoever, you know.
I think the customers were probably all treated all right in the store. You know, like, I guess they wanted their business. I mean, any businessman at a store, you wanted their business.
Was the period of... Did Weldon have anything that we could call a civil rights movement?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, our store was picketed one time. Not just our store, but all the stores in Weldon were picketed. And I'm trying to think why they were doing it. Something that they didn't like, was it up at the school or something? But anyway, they would parade up and down the street, and they would notify the newspaper, and even WRAL sent a camera down there. And as soon as the camera left, the pickets left.
And some of them said, oh, they didn't want them, these people who were picketing didn't want, it was on a Saturday, I think, and they didn't want any of the black people to come into the store. But we had black people coming in there, and they said, nobody's going to tell me where to go and shop.
Right.
And we did have some pressure from some of the more vocal black leaders that we should hire blacks. And they were even telling us who to hire. And we went out and hired who we wanted to. And they didn't like it one bit. They said they didn't. That woman didn't need this job. She worked. And she was very nice, and she got along fine with the customers, and she got along fine with our clerks. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we had several blacks working for us. Mm-hmm. They got along fine with our white clerks, and they got along fine with us. And, and our customers got along fine with them. You know, because we were a little selective, you know, whom we hired. And so were the other stores did, too.
But you would have been selective no matter who you hired.
That's right. But the original group that was putting pressure on, they didn't like it at all when I hired Elizabeth Rice. They wanted me to hire this one woman that I knew, and I just didn't think she...
We had clerks that never... Our clerks stayed. We never had changeover.
We had them working 20, 25, almost 30 years.
Wow.
You know,
when the
store was closed. And,
wow.
And,
they were like family. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I guess we sort of covered our lifestyle.
Anything else we should cover?
Fairly well. We talked about our...
Oh, how about telling about the time the Ku Klux Klan... marched in Weldon. This was years ago.
This was before my time, I'm sure. But my older brother tells the story.
The
1920s Klan. Yeah, see, my older brother was born 1917, so in the 1920s he was old enough to know what was going on. And first of all, the Ku Klux Klan invited my father to join them. And it was sort of a joke, you know.
The Klan just can't get that together.
They don't even know they're not supposed to like Jews. You know, it was a local Klan. So, and then one day, my brother tells the story, the Klan was marching up and down the street with the hoods on and everything. And he was standing on the sidewalk with my father. And he wondered out loud, I wonder who they are. And my father said, well, see that man, he's Joe Smith. And you see that man, he's George so-and-so. And my brother said, well, how do you know? He said, I recognize the shoes. But in my day, and I guess this is back in the 60s or 70s, the Ku Klux Klan sort of reorganized, and they marched through Weldon.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and because they got a permit and the police. There were
yeah,
more.
I think it was later than that. Yeah,
probably in the 80s,
yeah,
was it? I mean,
it was in the 80s.
And there were more police on the sidewalk than there were Klan.
Yeah.
Most pitiful bunch of folks
right.
you've ever seen
yeah.
with
right.
sheets pulled over.
Right.
I mean, it was just a laughing, they
yeah.
were the laughing stock. And a lot of the town people gathered. And there were a lot of blacks on the sidewalks watching them. And but you know there were a lot of police and they were out and
yeah.
Well,
back
nothing.
In the old clan, like the one where you saw
yeah.
the shoes, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Did they never figured out that they weren't supposed to like shoes?
I must not have invited my dad to join.
Yeah, I mean, his friends invite you know.
They were all people from town, I guess, you know, town and surrounding area that they knew him. They I guess they knew he was. They had to know he was Jewish. And my brother Joe, he tells a lot of these stories from way back. He's a much better storyteller than I am.
That's a good story. You tell it well.
Yeah. And
I would love to see it. You could almost see it in a movie or something, putting out the shoes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you want to just cut that off for 1 minute?
And we won't use names.
I mentioned just before that I had been blackballed from Rotary. Back in probably the late 1940s, I had already come back from being in service. That was in 1946, and I was living in Weldon, and I was active in the JCs and some of the community affairs. I was asked to join the Lions Club, and I told that to my father and told him I thought I would rather belong to the Rotary Club because most of the people my age and people that I associated with were in the Rotary Club. And my father told me that this lawyer in town had told him that I had been blackballed from Rotary. And that at that meeting, there was quite a row about my being blackballed, and that two of the members walked out, and one never came back. And this lawyer was in the Rotary Club, and he was there at the time. So after that, I went ahead and joined the Lions Club. And the only reason I could figure that I was blackballed, because at that time, no Jewish men were in the Rotary Club.
Right.
And I had a good name in town, and I was active, and I was the type of person that mm-hmm. most clubs would want
mm-hmm.
to be a member.
Were you in JCs?
Yeah, I was active in the JCs and the Weldon Business Bureau with the Red Cross and
right.
Boy Scouts and everything else. About 40-some years later, one of the former members of the Rotary Club moved back to Weldon, and I was good friends with him. Rotary Club had folded up quite a few years before, and I realized that this fella and his brother-in-law were the only two former members of the Rotary Club living. So I asked this fella if he remembers when I was blackballed, which he said he did, and I told him I wondered who did it, because I knew whoever did it wasn't living at this time. And he said, well, let me check with my brother-in-law and we'll see if we can figure out who did it. And a few weeks later, he came back and told me who blackballed me. And I have reasons, even right now, to believe that he did that because I was Jewish. And yet he knew me very well. He knew my family and I knew his family.
Yeah. Thinking about that, thinking about what you told us about the social club, was this a line just like completely idiosyncratic? That like where it was formed, like where a Jewish person could go and could not go, or was it? Did it represent like a like? Can you see like a? I mean, it's a prejudice thing, but is there a prejudice rationale that has any sense to it? Do you see what I'm saying? Is it,
I think.
Or do you think it was just hodgepodge?
I think the people who did the blackballing were just raised with that mentality.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they were
it's passed down from generations.
Yeah, they were probably just, in my mind, they were just ignorant people, even though.
Of course. Yeah.
But I think.
But it was there.
It was there, and I'm sure it's still around in many places.
I know. One other thing I thought of, our two older kids, our older son and our older daughter, used to play the let's see, the boy played the guitar and the ukulele, and they were having a sort of amateur hour night at school, and they had learned this little ditty type thing that they did together, you know, and it was really cute. And they played at the amateur hour, and then they voted who was the best, you know. And they had judges from the community. And, I mean, I wasn't the only one that clearly thought that these kids should have won the recognition, but they didn't. And later, one of the women came up to me, and she says, "Now, I did not vote for the person who won, who was given the recognition." She said, "Clearly, these two deserve the recognition." But one of the town
prominent
people voted against it and insisted that this other person win the recognition, and that too was a church thing. She was a member of her church, right?
Did that kind of thing happen enough that you did, or did just the way history is, I mean, that you kept like consciously on guard, or were these always like surprises, like cold water in the face kind of thing? That when something like this happened, was it like complete? Wait a minute, what just happened was, you know, or were you on guard for it?
I don't think I was on guard for it. I mean, it came as a surprise.
I think it was more of a surprise. I mean,
when
the
other day happened.
Right. Like on one hand, that's good. I mean, because it makes these more like exceptions.
Yeah.
Something you had to live with day in and day out.
Yeah, they were exceptions. Because, you know, our children were well liked in school and well liked with their friends. And all of them were not Jewish.
Ironically, I remember. One of them had problems in school, and it was between a black person and herself. And, you know, it was sometimes during the...
It was right after integration took place.
No, this was a little bit longer after, yeah.
This one fella, and he...
Okay, you don't have to tell what it was, but, you know, it was there.
Sure.
You know what I'm trying to say.
Well, it was a one-to-one thing. He kept harping on her, but it wasn't ever all the blacks. And
No.
He just kept calling you Jew or something like that. And you're a Jew. You know, stuff like that. He turned out to be a black minister. I don't know what his feelings are. but anyway, if you want to see some of those plaques.
Yeah.
Yeah,
show those to you.
I'd love to.
We won't.
I